Live and local, we're a Juno afternoon. How are you doing, everyone? I'm Andy Klein, your host for this beautiful Friday afternoon here in Juno. And today we're going to be talking with artist Debbie Bloom about her first Friday show at COPA. It's first Friday today. What a beautiful day for first Friday. Also, Christy Nami Erickson and Diego Sun Wu, her son, will be here to highlight a special postcard contest at Kindred Post, as well as First Friday activities happening there. We're going to be talking to KJ Metcalf about Sunday's Hiroshima Vigil, and Robert Sewell will be here with the details about Saturday's Douglas Island Neighbors Association annual celebration. That's all coming ahead. Plus, what we got, of course, Writer's Almanac, and we've got Bird Note, and music, and so much more. And it's the celebration of Summer of Love, so that's ahead as well. All coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. A federal appeals court this week upheld the domestic assault conviction against a citizen of the Northern Cheyenne tribe in Montana. Leon Seminole appealed his conviction, saying the victim, his common-law wife, should not have been compelled to testify against him. His attorneys argued spousal privilege should protect his wife's wishes to not take the stand. Assistant U.S. Attorney Brian Dake argued the case last month before the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals. He said hearing the victim's testimony is an important part of enforcing the provisions added to the Violence Against Women Act in 2013 that Seminole was convicted of.
The Violence Against Women Act, as this court has noted before, there is a grave problem of domestic violence in Indian country, grave problems with vulnerable victims. The United States government has an interest in successful prosecutions in order to combat this problem. This is something that is necessary for the government, it's necessary for the victims, and it's necessary for the community, and it is in line with hundreds of years of precedent.
The three-judge panel ruled unanimously that Seminole's conviction should stand, saying domestic abuse victims are notoriously susceptible to intimidation and coercion from abusers. The wife of a former Standing Rock tribal official convicted of sexually abusing a young girl signed a plea deal for her role in the crime. The Bismarck Tribune reports Rhonda Crine Fuglebear agreed to plead guilty for not reporting her husband's ongoing sexual abuse. Robert Fuglebear was convicted in April for repeated sexual abuse that started when the victim was 10 years old. He is scheduled for sentencing later this month. He is the former district chairman in Cannonball on the Standing Rock Reservation. His wife knew of the abuse but failed to report it. She eventually made an anonymous phone call to police that culminated in his arrest. Navajo Nation officials say the superintendent for Navajo Head Start is off the job after federal officials ordered an investigation for alleged misconduct and misuse of funds. The Farmington Daily Times reports the investigation involves 2 years of Sharon Singer's tenure at Shonto Preparatory School in Arizona. Singer's attorney tells the paper she intends to file a grievance with the Navajo Nation Department of Personnel Management. Vandalism prompted officials to paint over a mural memorializing a murdered Navajo girl. The Farmington Daily Times reports the mural was painted in May of last year on the walls of a tunnel on a Navajo Nation road. It was in honor of 11-year-old Ashlyn Mike, who was abducted and murdered. It included her first name and images of things she liked when she was alive. But it was recently vandalized with what police say are gang-related symbols and offensive images. An Upper Fruitland chapter official tells the paper leaders and community members will discuss other options for memorializing Ashlyn. The man charged in the crimes, Tom Begay, pleaded guilty this week to first-degree murder, kidnapping, and other charges. Colorado elected officials say EPA Chief Scott Pruitt is expected to join them for a tour Friday of the gold mine that was a source of a 3-million-gallon toxic waste spill 2 years ago. Pruitt is on a swing through Colorado to meet with coal industry representatives and state officials. Colorado's governor, 2 senators, and at least 1 other congressional representative are also touring the facility. They intend to hold a public town hall meeting in Durango. EPA workers caused the release of sludge from the Gold King mine on August 5, 2015. The waste contained heavy metals and other toxins that contaminated the Animas River and the San Juan River that flows through the Navajo Nation. The EPA contributed more than $600,000 to offset cleanup costs, but the tribe sued the agency last year, saying it failed to adequately remediate the spill. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University, we know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your Master's of Social Work and amplify your voice without having to leave it. The part-time online program accepts applications between August 1st and 31st. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Support by BNSF Railway. Proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd. Helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Scott McKenzie there with, I guess, really the anthem of the Summer of Love, San Francisco. And it's the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. We're celebrating that all this week here, KRNN and KTOO. But right now I'm with Debbie Bloom, an artist who's displaying her works today as part of First Friday at COPA. Debbie, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, especially on such a gorgeous day.
Yeah, it's going to be a great First Friday. And plus, it's a great First Friday at a place where they have ice cream.
Ice cream.
I mean, that's pretty perfect.
Couldn't ask
right,
for better.
Right, right. You were saying, we were just conversing, and you were saying, well, we deserve it here in Juneau, and you were saying you live up in Anchorage right now.
I do, but I spent 10 years in Juneau and understand what a rare and wonderful thing these days are.
Right. And you were saying that you kind of travel quite a bit for artwork and for what you do and spend some time in Southern California as well. And we're checking out your website. You actually have a lot of livestock kind of artwork that was kind of commissioned, I guess, is what I'm gathering.
I do have a lot of different animals. I had no idea when I first started selling my work about 4 years ago that people would ask me to paint all kinds of things, and I'm happy to do it. Like most artists, we just nod our head and say, when they say, can you paint a cow, you nod and say, yeah. How about a bear? Yes. How about an otter? Yes. How about my dog? Yes.
Yeah, all those things. So I guess this, as we say, you branched out very funny from trees and nudes is what you were working on for many years. And then you kind of started doing more animals, more wildlife and things like that?
Yeah, it was actually it was a surprise. I had a First Friday about 4 years ago. Some friends put me up to that because I'd painted for a long time, all my life really, and given away many paintings, but never ever considered that I would find it possible to make a living through my artwork. Which is my greatest joy, is painting. So I'm thrilled to say that I've done well enough to pay most of the bills.
Yeah,
and my future looks bright.
That's amazing, isn't it? To be a working artist is such a triumph.
Yeah.
Really,
but
to be able to do that.
I first branched out from trees when I had a show in Washington, D.C., and my friends there said, well, you're from Alaska, and people here are going to want to see wildlife. You should paint a bear. And I said, no, I paint trees and nudes. And they said, you should paint a bear. So I painted a polar bear, and it was snapped up in an instant, actually by Senator Begich for his place there in D.C. It was quite an honor.
Oh, that's great.
So after that, I started painting a lot more animals, and I do a lot of splashy colors and colors that would never be found in nature.
Yeah, and you work in acrylics and watercolors primarily, right?
Right, large-scale acrylics and small watercolors.
How do you choose?
Smaller canvases. paper doesn't come so huge.
I guess I'm just wondering, how do you choose when you see a subject, how do you choose, oh, this would be good for a watercolor or this would be good for acrylic, or how do you make that determination? Is it really just a size? It's really just, if I want to make a big painting, I'm going to go with acrylics, kind of?
It kind of is that way. It's kind of practical. I tend to paint larger animals on canvases and smaller trees or sets of seasons on paper.
Yeah, right. So is there a reason why you fell on those as those are the kind of medium that you use?
Well, I think I think the honest truth is that oils is it's a wonderful medium, but I'm not patient enough to wait for the oils to dry, and acrylics allow a lot more flexibility for painting layer upon layer and not having long wait times. Because I'm not a patient painter. I have to say, if you've seen my work, it's kind of splashy and bold brush marks and not a ton of detail.
Do you find you were saying that you started trees, and why did that kind of speak to you? Why were you so interested in that you spent, I guess, many years kind of primarily doing trees as one of the main subjects?
Trees and landscapes. Mm-hmm. I think that you can look out anywhere, especially in Alaska, and see something gorgeous. And the trees here, there's so many different elements and dimensions to them that they're fun to paint. And also, I don't think you can wreck a tree by saying, well, maybe I didn't get that knot right, it's not in the right place, because you make it up as you go.
Yeah. Are you trying to convey something emotional or something in as far as like personality or things like that when you're doing what we would kind of describe as sort of an still life or inanimate object, a tree? Are you trying to animate it in a way, or are you trying to represent truly what you see?
Well, I think I would call myself more of a representational artist. When I paint, I have a couple goals in mind. One is to have it be recognizable, and the other is to have them include some bright colors that may or may not be found in nature. I throw in metallic paints, and you might see red on a tree trunk or blue or greens that shimmer. And my goal in that is to have brightness, especially, you know, in Anchorage, and here we have a lot of dingy weather.
Yeah.
There's a 7-8 month winter, and my paintings generally bring some brightness to a room, and that's on purpose.
So is that something that you look for in your paintings? Are you trying to bring happiness, or are you trying to convey different emotions depending on the subject?
Well, I've been told that my paintings are fairly cheerful. When I paint an animal, what I try to do is capture that animal's eyes and mood and gestures in, you know, I'm working from photographs generally. That's more of a challenge than a tree, which is, you know, alive in some ways, but doesn't have a personality such as a dog or a horse or a cow.
Right.
And I've been painting those commissions for a while now.
Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting thing. You went from painting wild animals in Alaska, and then, as you say, as people sort of said, could you do this?
Yes,
I could. So is that, what's the challenge behind that? I imagine that painting someone's pet must be incredibly difficult, right? Because you have to get it.
It's not as challenging as painting people.
Yeah, okay.
I don't paint people. I paint pets. And I'll tell you a story about the first time someone asked me to paint a pet, their dog. And I painted it, and I thought it looked okay. And it's a little nerve-wracking to present the dog to the owner. And when I did, you know, because you don't know if they're going to like it or not. Does this look like Fido or
right,
not?
That's the thing. Yeah.
So I presented the dog, and she started to weep. She just cried.
Nice.
And
yeah.
I thought, oh, man, I have so messed this up. And it was the opposite. They
right.
were tears of joy. And then it happened again and again and again. And then it kind of became my goal that if somebody sees their animal and they tear up, I know I've done a good job, and so far, so good.
Are you painting animals that have often passed away? Is that
I've
typically
done memorial pets?
Uh-huh.
Yes, I've painted, 4 or 5 memorial pets.
This
yeah,
must be emotional for the owner.
Yeah,
obviously.
It's
yeah.
this interesting mix of sadness and joy that
right.
they get to have their pet living with them again on the wall.
Yeah.
It's really a joy to be able to give someone that and see the reaction. I'm very grateful for that.
What are some of the paintings you're exhibiting today at COPA? What are some of the kind of featured ones that you'd love for people to see?
Well, I did do a brown bear with a fish in its mouth. That's a giant painting. It's 48 inches by 30 inches. So that's a big
scale
canvas.
I mean, why such big scale?
I like painting big.
Yeah.
I do. I like wide brush strokes, and I throw a little bit of paint at the end. It's always adds a little bit of movement and
right.
an unpredictability to my work. And I, as we talked about before, I do all originals because I want people to know that they have something that nobody else does.
Yeah, and that was an interesting point. I was telling you that I once worked in an art gallery, pretty big one in Washington, D.C., that mostly sold prints. And it's an interesting thing, selling prints. I think it can be a very accurate and fair representation of an artist's work, especially if the artist really oversees the print process, you know. But it also there also can be shortcuts in printing, and it can be not very representational of the original artwork. So what is behind your decision to not do prints?
Well, I wondered about that. The folks in Laguna Beach, the galleries there, say my business model is off, that I need to do prints.
Right.
Because there's a lot of collectors that just want the original, knowing that many people have prints, but they don't. And I've spoken to several marketers in Alaska, and all of them agree that the print market is flat, there's way too many prints out, and my business model is sound because of just what we talked about, that it's a great thing for people to have affordable originals on their walls. And I may paint lots of trees, but no two trees are the same, no two animals are the same, and they can see the brush marks and texture of an original painting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating process to think about that, and it is an interesting thing. I probably just, it's right for whichever artist wants to choose whatever they want to do, I guess.
Right, and yeah. I travel all over the country, and people enjoy the commissions that I provide of original work, knowing that no one else has just that.
Of the Alaska animals that you do, is there one that you either identify with or that you feel like, I have a hard time getting that one?
Well, I haven't ever painted a moose.
Oh,
because I just think moose are odd-looking creatures.
They're weird.
No one's asked me to paint a moose, and don't take this as a hint. And please don't just say, okay, you have to paint a moose for me. I think there's a lot of moose paintings out there, and they don't really move me. I'd much rather paint a bear or an otter. Who doesn't want to have an otter in their house with a little holding a crab or a mussel?
Right.
They're wonderful creatures, and they're fun to paint.
Yeah. Well, it's happening today. It's happening in mere minutes. You got to kind of run over there
mere
and get your
minutes.
Ice cream going.
Isn't that
cream
exciting?
Going.
People have better grab their phones and show up.
So 4 to 6 today, First Friday is happening. It's happening, of course, all over town. But Cope is kind of the one end of town, a great place to start your First Friday adventure today.
With an ice cream and paintings.
Ice cream and paintings and maybe a little coffee. And get to meet Debbie Bloom. Debbie, thanks so much for coming in. Have a great First Friday
me.
And have a great showing.
I'll hope to see you there.
Okay, I'm definitely going to make it there. I'm definitely going to make it there.
All right.
I promise.
Thanks so much.
Here's more from the Summer of Love.
Love is but a song we sing. Fears we will die. Make the mountains ring, or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, and we're joined in the studio with Christy Nami Erickson and Diego Sun Wu. How you doing?
Good.
All right, man. We're gonna let's talk about some cool stuff that you're putting together, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so describe me what this is. This is a e-zine.
Mosk zine.
So what is this zine? Is it electronic or is it in paper form?
It's in paper form.
Okay, cool. And it's a Happy Mollusk? Is that the name of it?
Yep.
So what's kind of the content of what do you have in there in the Happy Mollusk? When people open it up, what do they see?
They usually see just regular mollusks, but there's also, like, there's different things that the mollusks do. Like, number two is the crash site.
Okay.
Where it was like bobbers crashed on the planet, and they tried to take over.
And who crashed on the planet?
Bobbers.
Bobbers?
Uh-huh.
What are bobbers?
Used for fishing.
Oh, bobbers, fishing bobbers. Yeah, okay, I've used them, right? And so they crash on the planet, and they are, like, are they the sworn enemy of mollusks, or are they...
Yeah, they defeat the mollusks.
They try.
There's nothing left except for their shells.
Okay, do they rebuild after that, or is it that's it?
Nope, it's gone.
That's a very dark issue of the magazine.
And it's kind of creepy, because there's, like, the pages just turn black. It's crazy.
Oh, man. Well, that one sounds kind of like doom and gloom, like scary a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But are some of them fun and funny? Some of them happier?
Some of them are sad, but not exactly. Some of them are funny.
Mm-hmm. How many issues of the magazine have you got out so far?
Four.
Okay.
I'm making a fifth.
All right.
There's Star Wars, which I made.
Well, you didn't make Star Wars. Okay, George Lucas made Star Wars.
I know, I made, like, the Mollusk Star Wars.
Okay, Mollusk Star Wars. Okay, now I'm getting it. All right. So that's cool. So are there Jedi mollusks, like Jedi snails?
It's like, what's it called? Return of the Mollusk.
Return of the Mollusk.
Like Return of the Jedi, kind of.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And then there's...
are there Ewok-type mollusks?
The fifth one I'm making is, what's it? Well, I made Boba Mollusk, but I never added him in.
Okay.
But I'm going to add
Bounty Hunter Mollusk?
But, yeah. Uh-huh. But the fifth one, I'm making the Muscle Awakens.
The Muscle what?
Like the Force Awakens, but the Muscle Awakens.
The Muscle Awakens. Yes.
And I'm thinking about doing the sixth, I think, which is going to be... The last mollusk.
I see.
Jedi.
I gotcha. Continuing theme here. Yeah. All right. So is this,
it's going to be the last gumboot, though.
The last gumboot. I like that better. The last gumboot. They're hard. They adhere
Shellfish
to that rock
fan
face.
Club.
Yeah. So is this something that is opened? Are there lots of zines happening coming out of the Kindred Post kind of collective of folks? Or this is just...
This is just Sunwoo's project.
Okay.
It's Diego's project.
All right.
Yeah.
I did the writing. I did the drawing.
Is it selling pretty good?
$2 each, and I just got 10, but they're meant to be two. Like, I was like...
So did you get five of them?
I was like, well, it's actually just two. I mean, you can have the rest. and then they're like, oh, keep the change.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good.
And I'm going to donate some to the Glory Hole, too.
Oh, that's cool. Very good.
20 or 30.
20-30%?
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. So you've got this, you're working on 5 and 6 right now, kind of conceptually on 6. You've got 5, you're actually starting to draw 5?
Yeah, I'm starting to draw 5.
Okay. Do you draw first and then write? Is it all drawings?
It's more like draw, write.
Kind of
writing and drawing at the same time.
You work kind of panel to panel?
If I mess up a mollusk, then I use it just for writing.
I see.
Like if there was a mollusk and I messed it up, then I turn it into an E.
Very good. I see. So your writing can actually be sort of illustrated writing, kind of, right?
I make some of my writing on some of the books 3D.
3D? Do you have to wear special glasses to read your book?
No.
Oh.
Like, just the writing 3D in the front.
Oh, 3D, like, kind of like you shade it, and it makes it look like it's popping out from the page almost. I gotcha. That's cool. Very cool. So is every page kind of like a complete page, or you do panels, kind of like comic book panels or graphic novel, or how do you arrange the pages? Do you think about how you're going to arrange the pages when you're going to do each page?
No, I just use blank paper, so it's like each. But I do kind of arrange them because I have to make them like the original Star Wars or the original ones I thought up in my head.
Uh-huh.
But mostly I think them up in my head and think up the words I'm going to add to it.
And so you just draw it. So each page kind of is one drawing, one concept, one part of the story, and then you move on to the next page.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Do you know what I mean? Do you know how sometimes in comic books, right, there can be a bunch of different panels on one page, right? But you don't do it that way?
Yeah.
You don't do it that way as much. You do the page to page to page. How many pages does each one of these usually get to? Like 300, 400?
In that range? Bring them up to, like, I don't know, 30 or 40 pages.
30 or 40 pages?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, wait,
that's
no.
A big number.
I bring
number.
Them up to, like, 20 or 30.
Yeah, maybe, like, 10.
10 or 20.
10 or 20 pages? Yeah, that's cool. That's a good read. That's a good nighttime read,
10
right?
10 to 40, yeah.
10 to 40 in that
but
range.
It's only for a little, it's only for, like, mostly my writing isn't so good, so I don't. So I don't know if people would be able to read it. I just think they might be able to read it. Like, some of it is, like, correct.
You mean, like,
oh,
your actual, your sort
mom,
of penmanship.
This is my life as a writer, too,
yeah.
Son.
Yeah.
So when you say your writing's not that good, do you mean the way that you convey your thoughts isn't the way you want it to? Or do you mean just your kind of penmanship isn't that great?
I don't know.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean by penmanship? Just messy? Is it messy, kind of?
Yeah, sometimes.
Messy. A little messy. Because sometimes writing, right, you have these great thoughts, and a big part of writing is being able to convey those thoughts.
Messy.
Yeah, or drawing is the same way. You have this idea of how this thing's going to look, and then you get it down, and you're like, oh, that's not. Or do you ever get to where you're like, that one was awesome?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you?
I draw
that's
lots
probably
of details on my picture.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the only thing I like to do is draw. Like, I've known to draw since I was, like, 5.
All
four,
right.
No, 3.
Started early.
And I was drawing and drawing and drawing and drawing, and I'd spend, like, 3 hours each trying to work on a page. And then I'd be done, and then the page would have all these details. But what I'm mostly about is Star Wars, because I like to draw the black.
Hey, man, I'm with you. I'm mostly about Star Wars, too. I love it. You know, Rogue One? Did you like Rogue One?
Mm-hmm.
That one was kind of tough, though, right?
Well,
like,
yeah.
Everybody dies in Rogue One.
Yeah, not even a hero, a single
oh,
hero.
Oh, man, I know. They all...
I cried so bad.
I know. It was tough. That was a tough one. That was a really tough one. But I like The Force Awakens, too. I think they're really nailing it again. You know, they're really getting the story again.
The one part
again.
I hate is when Han Solo gets killed.
I know.
Spoiler alert, y'all.
I know. Well, if you haven't seen The Force Awakens yet, it's too late. Sorry.
Too late.
Yeah.
I can't protect you any longer.
Christy, what else is happening at Kindred Post?
Well, that's the exciting news for us, I think, for today. That's what we're featuring for First Friday, is Sunwoo will be there and signing zines. He also picked out the snacks, so if you're into Sour Patch Kids, Cheez-Its, or grapes.
Or Pirate... No, you said Pirate Booty.
Well, unfortunately, Sun at IGA didn't have Pirate Booty.
No Pirate Booty?
No, no Pirate Booty?
Because I didn't want to have to break your hearts on air
First
like
Friday
this.
Is off!
I just warned everybody that there was Pirate Booty.
First Friday can't happen! Everyone
so
go
sorry.
Home!
I thought we could have this conversation
well,
in private.
I guess I have to split this $10 up to give to people who say,
maybe
sorry, man, sorry. I'm
maybe you could buy a bag of Pirate Booty with that. I don't know.
So that is what is going down tonight. In terms of, like, what else is happening at Kindred Post, I think another thing we're really excited about is our local art postcard contest that we've got going on. So between now and August 20th, we're encouraging local artists here in town, regionally, and across the state to submit work that we might feature in a new local art postcard series.
Very cool.
So we have details about that. You can find us on Facebook and get some more information.
Well, guys, thanks for coming in. And Sunwoo, in honor of you as a writer, here I'm going to play next Writer's Almanac by Garrison Keillor.
I get super carried away sometimes, though. When
so
like,
do I.
Right, I'm like, this picture's horrible, and I just, like, throw all my markers on the floor. I'm like, get out of here. I don't
That's
want
art.
It anymore.
That's art. That's being an artist, man. You get frustrated, but then you keep going, right? Then you keep going, and then the next time you do something, it looks awesome.
Except my paper looks Except the next time I draw it, it actually looks like bad again because I'm like, my tears, they're all over the paper.
my tears, the salt of my tears has ruined my artwork. Well, you're a tortured artist, and that's great. At a young age, very good. Keep working, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming in and letting us know about it.
Yay.
All right.
Thanks, Andy.
Here's Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 4th of August, 2017. 1830, on this date, the plans for the city of Chicago were first laid out. There was a commission was appointed to make plans for a canal to connect the Chicago, the Des Plaines rivers, lay out some surrounding streets. The surveyor, James Thompson, drew up the first map covering just about 3/8 of a square mile. The city had a population of fewer than 100 people at the time, but it was the first official recognition of the municipality of Chicago, which thrived, of course. 1848, the canal opened up a waterway from Lake Michigan to the Mississippi. First rail line came through the same year. Mail order retailers sprang up, Montgomery Ward, Sears, Roebuck, huge feedlots and slaughterhouses, and the city was on its way. It's the birthday of Louis Armstrong, 1901, in New Orleans, in a very poor neighborhood called Storyville. He sang for pennies on the streets of the city. He would scoop up the coins, stuff them in his mouth so the bigger boys couldn't steal them, and they gave him the nickname Satchel Mouth, later shortened to Satchmo. He worked for a family of Russian Jews, the Karnofskys. They were delivering coal to apartments and rooms. They were very kind to him. They helped him buy a tin trumpet. And because of the Karnofskys, Louis Armstrong wore a Star of David pendant for the rest of his life. As a teenager, he played dances and funerals and played on the riverboats. He got to play with Bix Beiderbecke and Sidney Bechet, King Oliver, who took him to Chicago in 1924, whereupon Louis Armstrong formed his own band, the Hot Five, made more than 60 records between 1925 and 1928, which influenced everybody who followed after him. It's the birthday of Percy Bysshe Shelley, born in Sussex, England, 1792. Grew up in a wealthy family, went off to Oxford. They kicked him out of school for writing risque poetry and for being an atheist, and his family cut him off financially at the age of 19. He eloped to Scotland with a 16-year-old bride. He abandoned her in favor of Mary Godwin, and they went off to Europe. When he had some very productive years, he wrote Adonis, an elegy for John Keats, and Prometheus Unbound, a drama in verse. Died before he was 30, trying to sail along the coast of Spain. And it's the birthday of the poet Robert Hayden, born in Detroit, 1913, went to work for the Federal Writers Project, studying black history and folk culture, became the first African-American to become poet laureate. Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson. It Was a Quiet Way. It was a quiet way, he asked, if I was his. I made no answer of the tongue, but answer of the eyes. And then he bore me on before this mortal noise with swiftness as of chariots and distance as of wheels. This world did drop away as acres from the feet of one that leaneth from balloon upon an ether street. The gulf behind was not, the continents were new, eternity it was before, eternity was due. No seasons were to us, it was not night nor morn, but sunrise stopped upon the place and fastened it in dawn. A poem by Emily Dickinson, It Was a Quiet Way. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Magoosh, online test prep for the ACT, SAT, GMAT, GRE, LSAT, and MCAT. Prep smart, go far, and enjoy the ride at magoosh.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Marvin Gaye there as we're celebrating the Summer of Love, the 50th anniversary of that happening. And Marvin Gaye there with one of the greatest peace songs ever written. And a couple of folks are here right now to talk about something else that's coming up with an anniversary, a much more somber notice of a celebration, not a celebration, but a remembrance of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That happened August 6th and August 9th in 1945, 72 years ago. And as a remembrance for that, the Juno People for Peace and Justice and Northern Light United Church are putting on a remembrance over in Marine Park. And KJ Metcalf and George Partlow are with me. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Well, our pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
You title it Never Again, and it's an interesting thing to think about. Sometimes I think we kind of take for granted, oh, that could never, of course, happen again. It was such a horrible thing, but probably pretty important to remember it takes all of us to make sure that sort of thing never happens again.
Well, when you consider there's probably around 15,000 nuclear weapons in the world, spread among several countries, obviously. U.S. and Russia have by far the greatest number. Some of those are on hair trigger, and accidents can happen and miscalculations can happen. So
15,000, that's a number I didn't know.
Yeah.
That is a,
there's about maybe 1,800 that are on high alert between the U.S. and Russia.
And that's those are just the ones that we're aware of that are on high alert between those
correct.
Two countries?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. High alert meaning what?
They could be launched within a moment's notice.
Just one word or just one code or something.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And, it's pretty frightening. And to think that it would take probably, I don't know, I've heard different calculations, but maybe a half a dozen bombs to destroy the Earth.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we have
the power that the bombs have now.
That's correct. Yeah.
Can we talk? Do you have those statistics and figures we talk about and think of? Of course, the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were catastrophic events with massive power, but they were toys in a way compared to the destructive power of modern bombs. Is that
right? They were in Hiroshima, 80,000. People were killed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that is prorated over the lingering deaths. There were obviously a number who were radiated who died later. And in Nagasaki, 40,000. One of the bombs didn't perform quite right, and so the power was less. But today those bombs, and some of them with multiple warheads, could destroy half the United States in a blink of an eye.
Incredible. Think about the power there. And so what are some of the things that you're trying to make sure that people are remembering when they're at Marine Park on Sunday and joining you to remember the event?
Well, it's an unthinkable weapon that we think we can use if we have to. And it is so costly in just dollars, billions and billions of dollars. We have committed over the next 10 years to upgrade our nuclear arsenal. And here we are arguing over health care and education and the environment and all these other things. And at the time, we're spending untold billions of dollars to destroy the Earth. And just those dots don't connect for me. But also, I think, and George, you might want to talk about this, the recent ban on nuclear weapons that 122 countries signed on to.
Yeah, there's an international convention for the abolition of nuclear weapons that was approved by 122 nations on July 7th, and it'll be opened for signatures in September 20th during the General Assembly meeting in New York City. They have to get 50 countries, signatories, to approve it, to ratify it, in order for it to have the force of law. But that could easily happen in a couple of years. The nine nuclear powers, United States, China, Russia, the UK, and so on, boycotted it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it is meaningless, because, for example, the United States never voted for the landmine treaty. Yet our policy these days really complies to the treaty. So I think it's important to understand that we have an opportunity to start moving in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
We banned biological weapons 45 years ago, chemical weapons 25 years ago, and as you may be aware, the United States has actually destroyed a lot of the chemical weapons, perhaps all of them now. So these things take time, but it won't happen at all if we don't start. And this is one way to start making the unthinkable truly unthinkable.
Do you realistically perceive a day when we can actually be rid of nuclear weapons? Do you think that's an achievable goal? You know, we see powers like North Korea, for instance, making it a stated goal that they want to become a nuclear power. It's a way for countries to get this upper echelon level of respect in a way, and you know that's how it's perceived anyway. Yeah. Talk to that a little bit. That to me, I'm not saying it's hopeless, right? I mean, but it does seem like there's such an incentive for especially kind of up and coming, quote unquote, powers that have a militaristic bent to them already to want to try to get into this nuclear.
Well, they want to
capability.
Belong to the same club
yeah.
as everybody
yeah.
else. I think from my point of view, I have no effect on what the North Koreans can do. But we live in a democracy here. I can have an effect. Anybody can have an effect on what the United States is doing. So I'm more interested in that because that's a possibility. And it seems to me it would be nice if we could remove the pretext that wannabe nuclear powers have. They say, we want to be just like you guys. How come you can have nuclear weapons and we're not allowed to? Well, if we get rid of ours, then that argument goes away.
And I think it's really important to have that voice. And so that's what Sunday's all about. And I think it has to start from the ground up, and people need to voice their hopefulness, their dream, and the goal is to someday ban nuclear weapons, and I think it could happen.
Well, it's happening, the remembrance of this event is happening Sunday, August 6th. It's over at Marine Park. It starts at noon, goes to 1 o'clock. It's 1 hour of remembrance of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Those bombs went off in August 6th and August 9th in 1945. And K.J. Metcalf and George Partlow from the Northern Light Church and from Juno People for Peace and Justice, thanks so much for coming in and let us know about it and have good event. Thank you. And a little bit more now from the Summer of Love.
They are beautiful, and so is their city. This is a very personal song, so if the viewer cannot understand it, particularly those of you who are European residents, save up all your bread and fly Translove Airways to San Francisco, USA. Then maybe you'll understand the song. It will be worth it. If not for the sake of this song, but for the sake of your own peace of mind.
light's beam creates dreams. Walls move, minds do too. On a warm San Franciscan night, oh child, young child, feel alright. On a warm San Franciscan night, angels sing, leather wings, jeans of blue, Harley Davidson's too. On a warm San Franciscan night, old angels, young angels, feel alright. On a warm San Franciscan night, I wasn't born there, perhaps I'll die there. There's no place left to go. San Francisco. Space is filled with hate. Heavens above, he's on a street called love. When will they ever learn? Old cop, young cop, feel all right on a warm San Franciscan night. The children are cool, they don't raise fools. American dream includes Indians too.
This is Bird Note. On a hot summer's day, you can watch a bird, like a crow, very, very carefully, and you'll never see it sweat, because birds don't have sweat glands. Instead, they've evolved a variety of other ways to keep cool. One of them is panting. As the bird breathes rapidly, its throat quivering, heat is carried out of the body via the lungs and air sacs. The lungs are a one-way system, so cool air coming in does not get mixed up with warm air coming out. Holding its bill open, the bird also oscillates a tiny bone in a part of its throat where there are a lot of blood vessels. The oscillations bring more blood to the area, allowing heat from the blood to dissipate. Bare skin on the legs, face, and beak also help the cooling. So do puffing out feathers, fluttering wings, or splashing in a puddle or bird bath. And soaring birds, like hawks, can simply ride the updrafts far above the ground to where the air is cooler. Closer to the ground, birds can also do what we do to avoid overheating. Keep busy during cooler hours and take it easy in the shade as the day heats up. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Mary McCann with a very funky bird note there. Auntie Klein back in the studio with you, and Robert Sewell, who you often hear at KRNN as a jazz host extraordinaire, isn't here right now. He's also a member in good standing and a resident in good standing of Douglas Island. And it's the Douglas Island Neighbors Association annual celebration happening tomorrow, Robert.
It is. Yeah. We're very happy to encourage people across the island to drop in. It's on 5th and Summer. From 3 o'clock until 9 with a community photo at 6.
So what typically happens at this Douglas Island celebration?
People eat hot dogs and hamburgers, scream a lot, tell whoppers,
right.
Get a free drink.
Hey,
and,
right.
why don't you listen to music,
right.
You know? Meet your neighbors, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Community, particularly in these times, is a big deal. So any way we can find to get to know one another a little better And people dig it. This is our fifth annual, so we're doing, people say we're doing a good thing.
That's good. So, and it seems to me like kind of downtown Douglas has become one of these cool neighborhoods to be in. You know what I mean?
Maybe in our own mind.
I mean, I've just known a bunch of different people who've kind of gone over there and finding fun little houses and cool places to live and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say for sure. There is a sense, there's a vibe. It's, you know, it's kind of like truth or beauty. You don't really, I can't define it, but you know it when you see it.
Right.
And that community buzz, that sense of belonging, it is very, I think it's a generous impulse. People kind of accept each other. And, you know, throughout the CBJ, there are new families, younger kids and all this stuff. So we're starting to see a turnover there, which is inevitable. But property values, I mean, as long as you think about fixing places up, it's definitely going up. I mean,
yeah.
I just finished re-roofing my house today. So,
your neighbors are thankful for that.
Yeah, right. It doesn't look as much of a dump. But there's 5,400 people that live on Douglas Island. It's 18 miles long, and something like 7 or 8 miles wide at the widest. So there's a bunch of people. We know for sure that Douglas Island is going to change over the next decade. The issue is to what and for whom. We're kind of hoping that we have a little bit more camaraderie going into that rather than missing it on the way out.
What sort of changes do you see on the horizon for Douglas Island?
Well, if you look at other places like Craig or Haines, the Outer Coast at Sitka, even Gustavus, we're starting to see kind of a gentrification, and that's going to continue because there's a lot of capital that's moving this way, you know, about 10,000 or more a day on those boats, for instance. But I don't want to be too grim about it, but the climate is changing, and some people don't really dig. Like my daughter's in Portland today. It's like 108. It's not so good. So for those reasons, people with their money will be moving up here, and there will be different business concepts, different government concepts. We just saw, I don't want to run it in the ground, but we got a surprise from the Department of Corrections that was going to have a pre-trial service in Douglas right next to the Montessori school, and people didn't have an opportunity to participate in that planning or lack of. So we would like to be more proactive. We'd like to be part of the conversation on the beginning, not the end.
Yeah.
And we've had a great opportunity to see, SEAC, the Trails folks, Trail Mix.
Yeah, Trail Mix, sure.
The child care folks, NIAC, Montessori, these various kinds of groups, CBJ Planning, CBJ Parks and Rec, they've come on different monthly meetings to talk about their vision, what they're doing, and what their hopes are. I'm forgetting several. There are some various, and each month is very interesting. But the whole business about getting together is just getting together. It's a sense of,
Well,
you guys do that all the time. Downtown and so on.
Sure.
In fact, you're kind of the master of it.
Getting, right.
You know, kind of getting people together. And that's it. People have a sense of sharing and
Well, it's interesting when you think about Douglas. Now, I've been thinking about this, and I kind of, in my head, I have to admit, in my head, I've been thinking about downtown Douglas. I've been thinking about that. But, of course, Douglas, I would say, has sort of three distinct kind of things, right? There's downtown, there's West Juneau, or that part of Douglas,
that's
right?
That's what they call it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's kind of North Douglas, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm guessing that everyone's welcome.
Oh, yes.
Right?
That's
and
a good point.
And
no.
Do you get participation from everyone?
We do. As a matter of fact, some of our real spark plugs are from actually the north end. It's funny, it's kind of actually the west end of the island.
Yeah, that's right.
Called North. It's due west.
It is due west.
Please come, feel more than welcome. It's not just for the old town site. Probably there'll be more of those because it's closer, and that's been more of the spark initially. But we've been chugging along on this kind of thing for 5 years. And, looking ahead, probably there are issues. I don't want to get necessarily inflammatory today, but there are some issues, some concerns that are island-wide.
Mm-hmm. And like so, there's no coffee shop. I mean, come on.
Where are you going to get that quart of milk?
Where can you get a good coffee in Douglas? I mean, Douglas Cafe has good coffee. They have good coffee, but it's not a coffee, you know.
Yeah, not dissing anybody.
No, right. But you want that latte. You want that to go.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff. I end up in Douglas multiple times a week just because I play basketball over at Mount Jumbo Gym. Right, and so there's a place I get into Douglas, and I see the stuff that's happening in Douglas as a result. Of course, Perseverance Theater, Douglas Cafe, mm-hmm. and Island Pub, and all those great businesses that are
and
there.
The Louis, hockey crowd.
Right, yeah, Treadwell Arena and all that. So there are all those things that are bringing people into Douglas. Is that something that kind of, as an island group, is something that's worked on and is a concern, trying to make sure you mentioned Department of Corrections. Of course, the Department of Fish and Game is over there as well. There was the big
post office.
Big thing about the post office that happened. That was something that really got people kind of energized around around Douglas Island.
Thanks for bringing that up. It's an interesting community planning thing, which is how to maintain. This is true everywhere. How do you maintain the values and the core vibe of who you are? Who are we? You know, what do we stand for? What do we want in 10 years? Versus development or kind of in sync with development. So you want, for sure we're going to have development. But the issue is, how will that blend and enhance the vibe? I don't want to be too cutesy about it, but they have to match, because if they don't, then you get stakeholders that disaffected and... you can just wreck that vibe in a heartbeat. So, yeah, there will be commercial development, but we certainly don't want to end up looking like South Franklin, and we could, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting point. All right, well, but tomorrow it's all about a party.
It's all about hot dogs. And
maybe there'll be this kind of, maybe talk about common issues and stuff, over a hot dog and a beer or something like that.
Right,
yeah,
and the third beer, then they have plenty to say.
That's right.
There's a porta potty, a lot of wood with some music and jawbone.
Very good. Sounds great.
Bring something if you want, a chair or a salad or whatever you want.
Yeah. It's from 3 to 9 tomorrow, and at 6 o'clock, that's a big thing to remember. That's when the community photo is. Has that photo been growing over the 5 years? That's pretty
cool.
Fun.
It
yeah.
has been growing.
That's
and
cool.
Tomorrow, the photographer, we always have a photographer, be Reber Stein, who's actually pretty good.
Okay, very cool. All right. Robert Sewell, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know. Saturday's Douglas Island Neighbors Association annual celebration starts at 3 o'clock, and 6 o'clock is when the big photo is. Thanks again for coming in, Robert.
Thank
Appreciate
you for
it.
Being here.
Let's play a little Hendrix here for Summer of Love Celebration.
After all the jets are in the boxes, and the clowns have all gone to bed. You can hear happiness staggering on down the street. Footprints dressed in red. And the wind whispers fairy. A broom is drearily sweeping up the broken pieces.
That's it for a Juno afternoon for today. Thanks for joining me so much, and enjoy this fantastic, beautiful weather we're having. It's supposed to hit 80 degrees tomorrow. It's going to be gorgeous, so make sure you get out and get your only chance for a sunburn of the summer here in Juno. Have a great one, everyone. See you later.